This is On the Other Hand, a podcast sponsored by Braver Angels in Arkansas that explores politics and other issues of importance to Arkansans through conversations with community leaders. Stay with us as we talk to another leader in Arkansas who works across differences to get things done and to bring us closer together.
Well, hello and welcome to On the Other Hand. I'm your host, April Chatham Carpenter, and I'm here today with my co-host, Glenn White. And get ready for today's conversation with a community leader in Arkansas who's helping work towards solutions. Glenn, who are we talking with today?
Well, I'm pretty excited about this, April. We've got Kathy Webb with us today. For many of you, probably know that Kathy is on the Little Rock City Board. She serves as vice mayor there. She is also the executive director of the Arkansas Hunger Relief Alliance. From 2007 to 2012, she was actually serving as a state representative. And she's done a lot of other things. I've looked at some of her history, and boy, she's got a lot of stuff that she's done over the years, too much for us to get into. But one thing I kind of will mention, because it's kind of something that I really think is really cool. For a number of years, you can correct me if I'm wrong, Kathy, believe you were part owner in a restaurant locally that a lot of us are quite fond of called Lily's Dim Sum. So you can go into whatever you need to correct that or anything else you want, Kathy. But in the meantime, welcome to On the Other Hand.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
Well, Kathy, I'm so glad to get to meet you and didn't know any of this about you. So I'd love for you just to start out by telling us a little bit about yourself and your background, whatever you'd like to share.
Thank you. I'm a PK. And for those who don't know what a PK is, it's a preacher's kid. And like a lot of PKs, I was not very enthusiastic about that at the time. But I kind of changed my mind as I grew up and was really grateful that I am a PK. And it certainly had a big influence on my life. And I got involved in policy issues early. So I think the two things that had a really big influence were my family. My background in church was very important. But also when I was in the sixth grade, I learned that just because I was a little girl, I was not allowed to be a safety patrol monitor. And that was what I wanted to be when we signed up to volunteer for class duties. And so I asked the teacher if we could go see the principal about it. And she reluctantly agreed. And so the bottom line to that story is the teacher allowed me, or the principal allowed me, to be a fire marshal that year, which girls had not been before. The next year, girls got to be safety patrol monitors. So I learned at an early age that change is possible, but that you have to speak up about what you want. And it also doesn't all come at once. So sometimes it's incremental, but every step is a step forward.
I love that. I love that personal story too about how you even learned that change was possible. I have a common background. My dad was always on church staff as well, although he wasn't the main pastor. So I did know what the PK meant. So, well, you certainly, with Glenn's introduction, a lot of things that are keeping you busy these days that are related to change and specifically trying to make a difference. And so tell us about some of those things that keep you busy these days.
As Glenn said, I'm with the Arkansas Hunger Relief Alliance, which is the statewide anti-hunger organization. And while one of the main things we do is secure food for the food banks and the Charitable Food Network, one of the other main responsibilities we have is the advocacy policy work. And I think from my initial story, you know that policy and change is very important to me, so I love the advocacy work. That means we're very busy with the legislature. We're busy right now lobbying Congress on the farm bill. Those things keep me really busy. And then as a member of the Little Rock City Board of Directors, every day I get to deal with all sorts of issues, from drainage issues, street resurfacing, Yesterday, it was short-term rentals, homelessness, crime, all sorts of things that have an impact on our residents. And I feel very lucky that I'm in this position to be able to work on these issues that are important.
So it sounds like you work both at the local level and at the national level in terms of the, you know, the farm bill and things. That's national, right?
That is national. And okay. I get to work very closely with people like Senator Bozeman. We have a great working relationship, and I think we're examples of people from different viewpoints who come together for a common cause.
Okay, we'll talk more about that as we go forward and get to hear more about your experiences there. But you also work at the local level, which is really cool to be able to see, you know, the policy change and the things that you're working at both levels.
So can you tell us a little more about what you do on the city board? A lot of people maybe voted for you or someone else and don't really always know exactly what it means to have the city run by a city board.
And you're right. A lot of people don't know. And no 2 days are alike with city board. It could be something like people don't get their trash picked up or their recycling picked up and they're not sure who to call. Or one of the things that we're spending a lot of time on right now is the tornado recovery, because parts of my ward were hit hard by the tornado, in particular Kingwood and Foxcroft. But then we go on to additional things like access to healthy food, because we have a lot of food deserts within the city of Little Rock. And the mayor appointed me to chair the city's food desert task force. So I get to work on that with my day job at the Hunger Relief Alliance and my other job on the Little Rock City Board, as we're working to find solutions for people across the city who don't have access to healthy, nutritious food that's also affordable.
Good. And then I gather that the board also votes on various things that come before them to determine whether or not something goes forward in the city, some sort of initiative.
Well, last night there was a good example of this, because we voted on short-term rentals and how to regulate short-term rentals. And those are things like Airbnbs and Vrbos. And it was actually quite controversial. We've kicked it down the road for a couple of years. And last night was the night we voted on it. And one would have thought the sky was falling in from both sides of the issue. And I did make the comment that because people on both sides were not happy with some of the things in the ordinance, it probably had some merit to it, because it showed that it was a compromise.
That's a good point. You know, we bring that up a lot in our work with Braver Angels. It seems like when people get so polarized, no one wants to compromise or give in. And so it's always good to see people compromise, but it unfortunately comes with this aspect of both sides being a little bit unhappy. And so that plays sometimes into the polarization. Well, listen, I appreciate that. Now, let me ask you this. You may know that in Braver Angels, we tend to identify people by their political persuasion, by calling them reds if they're kind of on the conservative half of the spectrum, or blues if they are somewhere leaning in the other direction. So could you tell us, even though that for many people it might be an obvious answer, I'd like to hear from you, what shade of red or blue or purple or whatever that you consider yourself to be?
And I think because I did run for elected office in the legislature, you run in a partisan manner. So there was a D beside my name, which would mean that I was of the blue persuasion. City offices are nonpartisan, but I would identify more closely with the color blue.
Okay. All right. One of my favorites of answers to that is one of our former leaders. She called herself Periwinkle, which I had to look up, but it is a shade of blue. Okay, you're kind of bluish to some degree. Can you tell us a little bit about the values that you hold, that you grew up with, the life experiences you had, the things that led to the development of your particular political leanings?
And I think growing up, as a preacher's kid, had a big influence on that. My dad was a United Methodist pastor, And one of the things that was instilled in us early on was to do all the good you can, all the time you can, in as many ways as you can. And that involved things like feeding the hungry, visiting the sick, caring for your neighbors. It involved a lot of things like that. And then my early experiences, not only when I was in the sixth grade about the safety patrol experience, I also read the paper as a kid. And I'm a little bit, I guess, oldish is the term now. But when I was in elementary school, help wanted ads were still classified into help wanted male and help wanted female. And I would read those ads and I would say, well, I want this job or I want that job. And those jobs would always be in the help wanted male. And I would ask my mom, why couldn't I have this job? I think I could do this. And so I think those experiences led me to work in social change. So from that early age, I became involved in working against discrimination against women and trying to open doors. And I ended up going to Washington, D.C., where I worked full time in the women's movement. And I think that was a natural outgrowth of the things that I learned as a kid. Being a girl shouldn't have stopped me from being a safety patrol monitor or having those jobs that I wanted to have in my future.
Very good.
So what did you do in Washington, D.C. as part of the women's movement? I'm just curious.
I was a national officer in the 1980s with the National Organization for Women and was very involved, particularly in the fight to ratify the Equal Rights Amendment.
Which probably didn't make you too popular in the state of Arkansas with the conservative groups, I'm imagining.
It did not. And I was president of Pulaski County now before I moved to Washington to take that. It was an elected position, and I moved there to assume that role.
So interesting. I'd love to hear more about, as you've had the chance to work with people who differ from you politically over the years, if you've worked during your years in the state legislature, Glenn tells me that you had a really strong positive reputation, even with conservative Republican legislators. And so, and clearly you were known as, more of a liberal, as you call yourself more on the blue side of things. And I'm just curious as to how did you manage building those strong working relationships across the political aisle?
It took some soul searching. And I can say that there were days when I wasn't always super proud of my response to somebody else's vote. When you are an activist, which I was previously, you didn't have to work with people that you disagreed with. And when I became a legislator, I did have to work with people with whom I disagreed if I wanted to get stuff passed. And there was an experience I had early on. The Equal Rights Amendment was being brought up in the legislature. And here I was all these years later, after I had helped organize the last rally in Arkansas in 1982 for the Equal Rights Amendment. And all of a sudden, I thought I might have this opportunity to vote on it 30 something years later. And that filled me with all kinds of emotion. And then a woman who voted no in committee helped kill that bill. And I didn't get to vote on it. I was very angry. And then before I could explode and be mad at this person, I remembered I was co-sponsoring another bill with her on a different topic that was important to both of us. And I was new in the legislature. And so I avoided her for a day. While I thought about it, I thought about her right to vote the way she wanted to. And then by the time I saw her, we were able to talk about the bill that we were working on together. And that made me actually grow as a person, because she did have a different opinion than I did about the first bill. And there was a guy from Little Rock who was on the other side of the aisle. He and I were very different, but we found out early on that we had something in common, and we co-sponsored a bill that went down in flames very quickly. And we had a conversation about it, and he and I started going out to dinner on Friday nights together, just the two of us. And we had these conversations about what we wanted to accomplish. Sometimes we talked about policy. Sometimes we talked about other ways that we could accomplish our goals. And I think those kind of intentional activities made me grow as a person and try to have more respect for other people's opinions with whom I disagreed. But it was very intentional. And I didn't know people before that I disagreed with that much, because I was in a silo of people who thought like I did, who cared about the same issues that I did. And here suddenly I was in this new group. And I was also like the only one. I was the first open LGBTQ person to be elected. And, you know, there were people who weren't quite sure how to deal with me about that. So it was very intentional. And I am incredibly grateful that I had that experience of getting to be friends with people. And I think that's important. We went out to dinner together, lots of people. And I think when Congress changed and people were encouraged not to move to DC and not to be neighbors, I think that was a big negative. And I think being in the legislature, when we were encouraged to spend time with people of different parties, I know it benefited me. And now a decade later, I'm still very close to some women who were on the other side of the aisle.
What a beautiful story. I mean, in terms of just kind of that growth as a person and being willing to do intentional things to reach out to other people. I love also the getting out of our silos. I think that's so difficult to do. And when we, and good point about also the activism, you know, whenever we are activists, we almost are oftentimes kind of in that narrow focus of what we're doing without reaching out to other people. So I love all of those things. Why do you think, in your experience, what is it that makes it so difficult to reach out to people who differ politically, that makes us want to just be in our silos?
Well, it's easier to be around people who think like we do. And I don't know, it's comfortable. When I was in the women's movement, I was so passionate about those things. And I felt that comfort in being in my group of people who were like-minded. So I liked that comfort. It was very important. And I think other people feel the same way. You can feel threatened by other groups. And I know, like in the book, I never thought of it that way. We get into, Monica Guzman gets into tribalism and those kinds of things. But it's that there's just that comfort of being with like-minded people. And I think we've gotten too siloed. I was looking at some statistics the other day from the last general election, some national statistics of blue and red, and there was a lot less purple. I don't remember the exact number of counties, but it was very startling to actually look at how polarized we've become.
Yeah, that tends to produce extremism. When you have extreme polarization, it tends to push people more to the extremes. They do, like you say, they feel more comfortable with people of the same beliefs. And so they get exposed to less, and, you know, it's a real problem. In fact, you know, you talked about Monica Guzman mentioning the issue of tribalism, and there are, goodness knows, no shortage of factors that influence our current high level of polarization. But I think tribalism is such a key component because it affects so many things in negative ways. Now, part of tribalism is relationships with a group, and that's not all bad. We're social animals, and you talked about getting together with other people of a different mind and establishing relationships. That's what we try to do in Braver Angels. But in much of society in this country these days, people are only affiliating with people who think like they do, those silos. And one of the problems with that is that it means, well, there's this saying that Plato once said, something like, you should not honor men more than truth. You know, what happens when you're, you know, being real tribal, you only hear your side and you tend to agree with what anyone in your tribe says, even if it goes against your values or even what your tribe said once before. You're not consistent with your values. And so you start getting away from facts, you get away from values. And that tends in the long run to mean that we have more false information out in our society. We're solving fewer problems. It's increasing divisions in our country. It just really undermines the effectiveness of our democratic republic's functioning. So I wonder, it's a big question, but I'm going to ask your opinion because, you know, everybody should weigh in on it. What kinds of things do you think need to be done to combat tribalism? And here's the other complication with that is that it, from my observation, it seems that tribalism works well, at least in the short term, politically. You can get your base riled up and get people motivated to come out and vote for you and against those horrible, evil people on the other side. So it does have a short term effective outcome. What do we do to have a more long term effective approach that kind of builds our healthy functioning in our government society?
I don't think it's restricted only to political leaders, although there is somebody who's running for president on the opposite side of the color spectrum that I am, who has not been afraid to speak out and speak up and disagree with things in his own party. And I know that it has cost him sometimes with the so-called base when he's done that. I admire him for doing that. And I think that other political leaders would be well served. I think our country would be well served if we had more people who were willing to follow that model in terms of elected officials. But I think business leaders, community leaders, individual citizens also have a big role to play. A few years ago, I was involved in a group and we brought some people here from Arizona who had been involved in the civil discourse program at one of the universities in Arizona. And we tried to bring a diverse group of people together. John Bozeman kicked off the morning and I introduced Senator Bozeman and talked about our relationship. And we had tables where we sat around and talked about difficult issues with each other in a respectful way. So what you all are doing, I think, is very important. Ironically, when you reached out to me, I had just finished the book by Monica Guzman a week before. And so I think it's important that we do what we can, regardless of our role, to spread the word. And when folks ratchet it up on social media, I try to tamp it back down. So it, individual responsibility and then group responsibility and leaders taking responsibility.
So we're taking a quick break here and we'll be back shortly with our guest, Kathy Webb.
So Glenn, Kathy just mentioned Monica Guzman's book, I Never Thought of It That Way, and I thought it might be helpful for our listeners to hear a little bit about our experience with that book and with meeting Monica when she came to Arkansas. I know that we also have a podcast episode, two podcast episodes actually, where we interviewed her. But let me just start by talking about what I got out of reading that book and why I find it to be so valuable to introduce our listeners to it before we continue on with the rest of the conversation on this first episode with Kathy. So Monica is a digital media specialist and a journalist who has been working for a while now with the National Braver Angels organization. And she has had an interest for a long time in the importance of curiosity in helping us reach across our differences. And she came to this interest, and she tells the story when she came to the University of Arkansas at Little Rock for her visit in the last few months. She talks about that this started because of her parents. Her parents were immigrants from Mexico here, and they kind of went against what some people would think stereotypically Mexican immigrants might be in terms of politically. They actually voted for Donald Trump and voted for him twice in the 2016 and 2020 elections. And Monica lives in Seattle, and she actually lives and is a pretty liberal person. And so she had to learn to ask her parents and talk about what those experiences were that led them to actually vote for Trump, and then, you know, continue the relationship with her family, even in the midst of that pretty divisive two elections that we've had. So she wrote this book that is like you're just listening to her talk. If you listen to the book or you read it, it's like you're having a conversation with her about her experiences, in which she really talks about the importance of not siloing ourselves in our tribal groups. And we reference that in today's episode. So what did you get when Monica came to visit? What were some of the takeaways that you had?
Well, one of the things, she's just so articulate, but down to earth, and just like an average, everyday, friendly person that is really engaging, you can really have a relationship with. And that seems to me very important. I think Monica's key point, as you said, is about curiosity and the importance of being genuinely curious about what someone thinks about something when you see someone is thinking differently than you. And I think that's important, because that type of curiosity, if you can think of curiosity rather than figuring out what kind of ammo you've got to demolish their opinions, then you're going to be more likely to facilitate a calm environment for discussion and therefore promote the development of at least the beginning of a relationship. It decreases hostility, and I think that's going to be really important to maintain that. It reduces the emotion that sometimes gets us into bad places. So I think it's a really valuable thing that she has to say. And apparently a lot of other people think that too, because that book wound up being a bestseller for her. So there's one other thing that really struck me about what she had to say. And so I cannot quote her, but it's something like this: those people who you do not know occupy a big part of your mind or your fantasy or your nightmares. You may remember that better than I.
Yeah, it was your imagination. So the people that you do not know take up a huge space in your imagination. Basically, we make up stories about them based on what other people say and the media and our own groups. But once you get to know them, then you realize they are much more complex than that simple kind of explanation that we've been labeling and giving them.
Because before you know them, in your imagination, you tend to fill it in with all the doubts and fears and negative expectations until you get to know them. So that's a good point. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, let's get back to our interview with Kathy Webb, who describes for us how she and a group of people of differing views and roles in the community were able to engage in civil discourse.
I'd love to hear more about what happened in that dialogue, those dialogue groups that you all set up, that you were just talking about with that, when you, you know, and John Bozeman was the kind of lead off speaker. What did you all do? What kinds of processes?
It was kind of fun. We had about 150 people who signed up to participate. We had Democrats, Republicans, we had community leaders, and we set up some ground rules based on a civil discourse program. And we actually talked about some difficult subjects, but we had certain rules that we had to follow. If Glenn expressed his opinion, I could disagree with Glenn, but I couldn't attack Glenn personally. And I think too often today we go from opinion expressing to personal attack. And so it was challenging because we only had about an hour to do these exercises, but I think we all took something away from that, that we could learn. And interestingly, over the last few months, several of the women who were involved in that group have reached out, and we've talked about needing to get something like that going again, needing it even more today than we did a decade ago.
Well, we have some ideas we could potentially suggest to you from the Braver Angels work that we do, so we can talk about that as well in terms of the civil dialogue kinds of sounds like the things that we do with ground rules and our discussion-based forums that we have set up. So we have some opportunities that might be, if they're wanting to work together, so we can talk about that. So the civil discourse is certainly needed today. No doubt about that. I think about, the desire for individual citizens to play a role also, and how that is something sometimes we leave to our government officials to actually think, oh, they can do that. But you're certainly an illustration of how working at the local level, as well as your advocacy work over the years, is an important part of working across the divide.
Well, Glenn, we've run out of time for our first session with Kathy Webb today, but we have many more things to talk about. So I hope folks will stay tuned and listen in for the second part of our conversation with Kathy. Thank you to our listeners for joining us on today's edition of On the Other Hand. And this was the first part of our conversation with Kathy Webb. Be sure to check out the second part of this conversation with Kathy, as well as other podcast episodes of On the Other Hand. You can find us on the podcast page of the Braver Angels Arkansas website, and that web address is arkansas.braverangels.org. You can also find us on many popular podcast sites.
And when you visit our website, you can help us improve our program by responding to a brief survey using the link on our podcast webpage. You can also email us for program or speaker ideas or other feedback. Just email us at otherhandar@gmail.com. No spaces, otherhandar@gmail.com.
On the Other Hand is sponsored by Braver Angels in Arkansas. Music was composed by Randall Standridge of Jonesboro, Arkansas, and was performed by the University of Northern Colorado Symphonic Band. Dr. Richard Main, conductor.
From your host, Glenn White.
And April Chatham Carpenter.
Let's each work to do our part to bring our community closer together.